The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and major public research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries at UWM today. Here's the host of UWM Today, Tom Lujak, Vice Chancellor for University Relations and Communications.
One of the highlights of Milwaukee's literary scene is the naming of the city's poet laureate. This year, fans of poetry had twice as much to celebrate as the Milwaukee Public Library, which sponsors the Poet Laureate program, named two poet laureates, and both have strong ties to UW-Milwaukee. Jim Chapson is a member of the UWM English Department faculty, where he teaches creative writing courses. And Jeff Poniavich earned his bachelor's and master's degree, both degrees in English, from UWM, and he has also taught courses there. Both Jim and Jeff are in the studio with us as UWM Today celebrates poetic expression. Welcome to the program. Good to have you both with us, Jim and Jeff.
Thank you. Thanks, Tom.
So let's talk about what it's like to be a poet in Milwaukee. Jim, is it an easy job? Is it an undertaking that that
so
you embrace?
Easy because everybody ignores you. Because being a poet in Milwaukee is like being kind of a blank space by the lake. Poetry, as you know, is kind of sometimes condemned as an elitist art. I mean, there are popular forms of poetry like poetry slams and spoken word poetry. But the more traditional written poetry is pretty much ignored in the culture. You know, and when was the last time you read a book of poetry?
Probably in preparation for this program. So that's a saving grace. Right?
And before that.
Well, probably about a year ago. I'm more of a historian, history buff, reading literature on that and politics.
Right. So it's become very specialized. You say, I mean, you read history, other people read poetry, some people just read novels, some people read political works. But there are not many people who actually buy poetry books every year and read poetry.
Although publications like The New Yorker, for example, does regularly carry poetry selection. That is a way for some of us to redeem ourselves and get our dose of poetry in.
Although this number of subscribers of the New Yorker and Milwaukee is probably not a very large percentage.
Correct. Yeah. I'll give you that. Jeff, how about you? The life of a poet in Milwaukee.
Well, when people ask why are there two poets laureate this time around, I wish I could say it was because there is such a great demand for poetry that a single poet laureate cannot keep up with this. And next year there may be three. But Jim is right. And actually, poetry was more popular during the 1960s when both Jim and I were aspiring young poets getting into poetry. And for instance, at UWM, there were poets coming through left and right. And now, because of the so-called economy, which must be a very dysfunctional economy if it cannot afford to bring more poets through, now we have maybe one major poet come to read at UWM per year. Is that what it is? In the spring semester, usually at the beginning of poetry month. And also, poetry has been somewhat co-opted by popular music, some of which is the lyrics of some of which is very poetic, and most people are content with that. For one thing, it's got a nice melody going with it, which Jim and I would be hard pressed to come up with, I think. So our job is cut out for us, and what we are. One of our duties as poets laureate is to increase the appreciation of poetry. So in our own humble ways, as just one person apiece, we are doing our best to do that. And one of the things we have to do as a condition of being poet laureate is to participate in and or organize 5 poetry events per year. And this gives an opportunity for poetry to get somewhat more attention than it normally would, just as the poet laureateship in the United States has become something to help popularize poetry, and also the poet reading at the inauguration of a president, and that began in the early 60s with Robert Frost.
Sure. So that you do have moments in the course of a year where poets are put in the spotlight. And when she still had her program on, Oprah periodically would bring poets on, and I remember seeing a couple of programs where there was a celebration of poetry. Somebody told me as I was getting ready for this program that they asked whether or not poetry is being taught in the schools, in elementary or secondary schools, like they once were. Jim, might that be one of the reasons why you don't see as many folks talking about or reading poetry today as a generation ago?
It's been a long time since I was in elementary school, so I can't really speak to what it is today. But students I have, freshmen and sophomores in college, vary a lot in their exposure to poetry, and depending on what schools they've been to. Some of them have had quite literary English classes in high school, and others have not. So what the general state of the teaching of poetry is now, I have no idea.
Well, how well prepared are they to learn more about poetry when they do arrive as freshmen in college?
Well, if they're taking the course, it means they're especially the self-selected group who is interested in writing. And being bright and young, they're eager to explore things. But still, a lack of kind of any background makes some difference.
Both of you have different approaches to poetry, different ways in which you express yourself. How would you describe your work? And Jeff, maybe begin with you. If I were to say, what kind of poet are you? What do you talk about? What would be your answer?
Well, I write poems on all subjects. I'm most known as being an, quote, eco-poet. And by that is meant someone who to whom the muse of nature and environmental awareness is a frequent visitor, more so than for any other subject. And those are important subjects. And so I'm known primarily for that. But I also have a chapbook, for instance, of poems that have to do with my having grown up on the Polish Catholic south side of Milwaukee, called Polish for Because, and that's the title of one of my poems in the book. And I was an altar boy at St. Josephat Basilica. All that is in this particular book. And plus some nature poems, for instance, my grandmother's garden. My Busha, Polish for grandmother, I have a poem about, and how her love of her garden was something that was an early impression. So I write whatever the muse brings me, and I guess we each have our different muses.
How about you, Jim? How would you characterize your poetry?
I wouldn't. It's hard to say. I mean, there's different ways of talking about poetry, and there's different sorts of poetic movements of the last decades. In the 1970s, a style called language poetry arose, which is one of the primary instigators of it was Ron Silliman, who I knew in college in San Francisco State. And that took poetry in a direction which does not interest me. I like poetry which is kind of more based at least some way on classical models, Greek and Roman, and also sort of 20th century poetry like Eliot and Cavafy. For subject matter, I often write things which are sort of explorations of things I come across in my reading. And so a lot of my poems begin with an epigraph, something I've been reading in the poems, an exploration of an idea.
When you think about poetry, I think back to when I first studied as a grade school kid and high school, the bit of poetry I got from the nuns at St. Joseph's down in Cudahy, there was always a very traditional manner of presentation, and if there was a rhyme to it, all the much better. If you had a couple of syllables that rhymed, your poetry isn't like that. I've been able to read a little bit of both of yours, and it really, as I consider both of your poems that I've seen so far, you get to the idea right away without wasting a lot of words. Is that, and I shouldn't say wasting words, using a lot of words. There's a real precision and conciseness. Is that by design?
It's purely by accident.
Is that how good poetry is in your mind?
Well, that's a goal in poetry, is to say what you have to say in the fewest number of words. And once you've written the poem, most poets go through the poem and see if there's anything that is extraneous, because it's by compacting meaning into fewer words that it distinguishes itself from prose, for instance. Though there is poetry that is eloquent, chopped prose, and I'm not adverse to such poetry. Some of mine might even be thought of that. But there are many poets who have done that, and it's called free verse. And Walt Whitman began that tradition. Jim has more formal models that he's working with from antiquity, but he makes them modern. They should certainly reverberate nicely with those past inspirers, but what he's saying is, you know, right on to the present moment as well.
Jim, you talked about the poetry slams, the sort of happenings where you might have almost a nightclub environment.
Right.
And you said that that is one way in which poets express themselves, but there's not a lot of that in Milwaukee?
No, it's not. I wouldn't say it's one way poets express themselves. It's one popular form of poetry. And I don't know right now, because I don't follow that very much, but in recent, the last 10, 20 years, there used to be a lot of poetry slams in Milwaukee. But that's often almost a form of stand-up comedy, and it's a form of performance, in my view, rather than poetry in the sense that Jeff and I write it.
Well, on the other hand, the word perform is often used nowadays. I use it myself, because if you're going to put it out to the general public, the word perform sounds a lot more exciting than reading, and so... Jim may not think of what he does as performance, but he's an effective reader of his poems, and therefore he is somewhat doing a performance of the words. He's just, as any good actor would, be knowledgeable of the text and able to convey that vocally.
Jeff, you said something before that really caught my ear when you talked about how musicians today may be one of the main methods through which poetry is consumed, because so many of the lyrics that you hear in songs are poetic. And in fact, one of the fun things when I have way too much time to do is to get online to some of the lyric sites on the web and just look at songs that I'm familiar with or maybe unfamiliar with, just to not listen to them, but to read the lyrics.
Right.
And I was doing that the other night and was struck with, in some cases, how poignant and how powerful those words were without any music as an accompaniment.
Well, many of the best rock poets or pop music poets actually have read poetry. Bob Dylan got his name from Dylan Thomas, for instance, and had read the Beat poets. And a lot of the rock lyricists or songwriters and who have come up with wonderful melodies also have read these poets and been inspired by them. And that also extends into the realm of activism for some of these pop music icons. They, like Bono and Paul McCartney and Don Henley of the Eagles, they have activist concerns as well as the poetic concerns of their lyrics. And they also were inspired by that, by people who came through in the 60s, like Allen Ginsberg, for instance, who really dared to apply poetry to what was happening in the world. He wrote a book called Planet News, for instance. So, I don't think that poets have been completely eclipsed by these popular song people, but it really takes some evangelism in a way. I worked in the poets in the schools program, the Wisconsin Poets in the Schools program, during the 70s and the 80s, and that was interesting, and I think I was somewhat successful, but the initial question was from the children, teenagers usually, who were in my who I had to go and visit in their classrooms, was how much money do you make, you know, or do you do this for a living? And the fact of it is, almost no poets do this for a living. Poets like Jim and myself, we are lucky to, if when we have an opportunity to share our love of poetry in a classroom situation, that's one way of getting this appreciation increased.
Well, we're going to let you both share some of your poetry in just a moment, but first let me remind our listeners that you are tuned to WUWM, listening to UWM Today. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in the studio is Jim Chapson. Jim is a member of the UWM English Department faculty teaching creative writing courses, and with him we've got Jeff Ponevich. I think I've got it this time.
Ponevich.
Oh, I'm going to get it yet. I know Polish is a big, your heritage is a big part of your poetry, so I want to make sure that we give you due credit there. Both Jim and Jeff were appointed just a short time ago this year as poet laureates for the City of Milwaukee, a wonderful program started by the City of Milwaukee's Public Library. Continuing now, I think they're in their 13th year, and if I'm not mistaken, on the research we found, all but one of those poets over the past 13 years has had a good, strong connection to UW-Milwaukee. Jim, do you want to go ahead and share with us one of your poems as we talk about it? We sure should consume some of it, so we get a feel for the work that you do that helped win you this this wonderful appointment as one of the two poet laureates.
Okay, I'll read a very short poem. It's just four lines. In Woody Guthrie's America, the tools to build our future could be found in the general store, a hammer and a sickle.
Wonderful. How did that come to you? What's the origin?
There's a painting by the done by the under the sponsorship of WPA in the 30s. I forget the artist's name. There were murals that in a store in Chicago, and the store was being torn down. The murals were removed. I think they were on canvas. And they showed sort of idyllic pastoral Midwestern scenes of hay fields and small towns. In one of the paintings, there was a hardware store or general store with, you know, various farm implements and things in the window. And down in one corner, there was a hammer and a sickle crossed, just as in the communist icon.
So a little bit of subversion in the work, perhaps?
Well, I wouldn't call it subversion. It was part of the sort of idealism of the 30s, where it seemed possible that, you know, communism, not necessarily Marxism, but some sort of communism would be would sort of hold the salvation to our future. And that's been long gone. Now, but as I suppose that's why I say in Woody Guthrie's America, because that was Woody Guthrie's idea, which you know from his folk songs.
And whose folk songs, if we get back to the thought of how lyrical they are, great poetry in some of those verses.
Yeah, I make a distinction between poetry and song lyrics. You can't make a hard distinction. There's no overlap, certainly. The Elizabethans are often, the songs and poems were the same. But students often come to in the creative writing classrooms now with an interest in songwriting. That's their interest in poetry, is through songwriting. And what they write are song lyrics. And I try to wean them away from that and get in more into what we call poetry rather than lyrics.
Okay. Would you care to read one more for us?
Okay. This uses the word complications in the sense of, as you know, expensive watches. have those sometimes elaborate mechanisms that go beyond just telling time. The phase of the moon and such are called complications. The watches of the rich have complications. Astrolabes, phases of the moon, sidereal time. Simple time is malleable to their command, but they need more. Perpetual calendars, planetary motion, the universal time of stars. The watches of the poor are day and night. In the day, the poor will work, if there is any work for them to do, if the rich have thrown to them some of their leftover time, which can be exchanged for food. The night of the poor is unlimited space overflowing with joy and suffering. The rich have neither night nor day. They have complications. May 12, 2073 will be a Friday, the moon in its first quarter, Jupiter entering Capricorn, at their command. And anyone who wishes to observe the moon display its phases, the constellations whirling in procession against the black dome of the sky, must ask permission of the rich, who have gathered to themselves all the time in the world. They are glutted with time, while the poor are full of emptiness, which is why they can afford to be so generous, desiring neither time nor any of its complications. They have all the time in the world.
Lovely, lovely.
Thank you.
Did you write that recently?
Yeah. This is the first time I've ever read it.
Wonderful. What was the inspiration for that piece?
I couldn't say.
Sometimes it just comes to you.
It just, yeah. This didn't come from risks, just occurred to me.
How long does it take to write a poem like that?
This one, I've worked on for, I don't know, about 2 months.
Wonderful. Great imagery there and real depth and wonderful emotion.
Well,
thank you for sharing.
I hope so.
Jeff, we're going to ask you to share some of your work now. What would you like to read first?
Okay, I'll read a couple things that will be of together of about equal length to what Jim shared. And the first one is the ending of a poem I wrote about my name to give an example of a non-nature, non-eco type poem that I've written. And goes, age 14, I wrote my first fledgling poem. Distant valley and teeming streams pave the way for comely dreams, etc. And now when people ask what I want to be when I grow up, I say poet. My last name's pronounced Ponyevash. When I found out Joseph Conrad changed his name from Joseph Korzeniowski, and Mark Twain changed his from Samuel Clemens, which isn't that hard to spell or pronounce, I tried out several noms de plume, more likely to appear stamped in gold on leather bindings. Now I realize my own name neatly expresses my entire meaning. When the priest poured water over my head, my crying drowned out the word that he said. Forget my first name, my last name will do. It plainly explains what, how, and who. Ponyevash is Polish for because. Because Ponyevash is Polish for because. The poet's handy omniscient reply, what parents tell children when children ask why. Ponyevash is Polish for because. Because Ponyevash is Polish for because.
I imagine every mother who heard that is going to be thinking of your last name the next time one of their kids says, why, Mom?
Yeah.
Because.
That's my raison d'etre, too. So anyway, and here's an example of a short eco poem that I wrote in 1975. And it's on the subject of the endangered species, but through something that actually happened that was quite ironic, and I therefore wrote it down. And quite timely, although I wrote in 75, now that the Butler's garter snake is being taken off Wisconsin's endangered species list to facilitate the real estate industry paving over what's left of the natural world in Wisconsin, This one is called The Last Endangered Species Glass. 3 years ago, two friends gave me a set of six endangered species glasses, each glass etched with the picture and name of one of the species near extinction. The oryx was the first to bite the dust. A friend laughed so hard at something I said it slipped, full of wine, from her fingers. A few months later, the cheetah fleeted faster than my reflex to catch it. The polar bear was the loser in a battle with an ice cube tray. The whooping crane flew out of my hand as I wildly gestured a poem. The eagle was the last to go. I broke it against the faucet while doing the dishes. Each time one of those glasses broke, I got a lesson in fragility, a shattered metaphor for what extinction means. Now only the tiger remains, and it's chipped.
That was very, very neat. Very neat.
Thank you.
You have 2 years appointment in your appointment as poet laureates, and Jeff, you mentioned that one of the obligations or roles
duties
is to do periodic public readings. Do you have any plans right now to be out there in something more formal or organized, Jim? How about you?
I gave a reading at Woodland Pattern on Logan Street last week, and we'll be reading in about 3 weeks in Dublin, Ireland.
Really? What's the event? What's the occasion there?
A book launch with my last book, Plotinus Blushed.
Wonderful, wonderful. So you take your Milwaukee bred poems abroad, which is a wonderful way to showcase the work. And will you be introduced as poet laureate?
I try to keep it a secret, but...
No, based on what you said at the beginning of the show, we have to celebrate this.
That's,
we want
right.
more
Sorry,
people
I forget
to...
that, right.
I'll try to remind him once in a while.
Right. Yeah, how about... Do either of you have any plans to read together? Might that be something?
We read together in May, in the beginning of May. It was the so-called inaugural reading, so we can... We can't say we read at the president's inauguration, but we could say we read at our own inauguration. And, Jim and I, we like each other's poetry and respect each other as poets, but we have very different paths, which seldom come together. And I have the feeling that as poets laureate, we will be pursuing different angles. And in November... Something may be happening at UWM, a tribute to Rabindranath Tagore, who is the most famous poet of India and was considered sort of the Walt Whitman of India. This November is going to be the 100th anniversary of Tagore winning the Nobel Prize for Literature. And so I've been in contact with Milwaukee's Indian community, the East Indian community, especially the Bengalis, where Rabindranath is from Bengal. And so this will be a very wonderful chance for poets, for the general public to get a load of what a wonderful poet Rabindranath Tagore was.
Wonderful. Well, we are so happy that we were able to bring the two poet laureates together, at least for this one special public reading. And since you're both serving for 2 years, perhaps we can convince you a year from now and the one-year anniversary to come back and do this again.
I'd be delighted.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of UWM Today. We thank you for joining us as we celebrate the two poet laureates for the city of Milwaukee, both with strong UWM connections, Jim Chapson and Jeff Ponyavich. I think I'm getting that right. Our guest on this edition of UWM Today. Take care, everybody. We'll see you next week at the same time. I'm Tom Ujak.
You've been listening to UWM Today, the weekly program where you meet the faculty, staff, and students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee who help make a difference in the lives of people in southeastern Wisconsin through their teaching, research, and community service. To learn more about UWM, go online to uwm.edu.